You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Kira Rodriguez, and co-hosting with me today will be Nate Carvalho. Christy Page specializes in lighting for animation and visual effects to bring stories to life. She has been a team lead on multiple projects for various studios, such as Industrial Light & Magic, DreamWorks Animation, and Double Negative, just to name a few. Because of these bountiful opportunities under her belt, she has a yearn to share what she has learned by giving back in the form of mentorships through organizations such as Women in Animation and Rise Up Animation. Some highlights of today's episode will cover her day-to-day, some trends she sees among mentees during her mentorship sessions, and the importance of holistic growth and development. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy!
My name is Christy Page, and I've been working in visual effects and animation for about for over 10 years now, mostly as a lighting artist and mostly at DreamWorks Animation, although I've also had a short stint at DNAG, and currently I'm at Industrial Light and Magic. I love animation and film because it's such a creative media and to tell stories in, and it's such a cool intersection of art and technology.
Let's talk a little bit about your origin stories and how you started out.
Yeah, I grew up in Northern Virginia near Washington, D.C. Both of my parents were computer scientists, so I was always around computers and technology. But also what was nice is my family had always loved art and had always had like creative hobbies. All of my cousins and aunts and grandparents, they all were painters or crafts or whatnot. So from an early age, I'd always been pretty creative or drawing or painting. And also all throughout elementary school and through high school, I had lots of friends that were really into drawing and animation or writing. I was in like an anime club and we were drawing and animating. In my high school, I was pretty fortunate. My high school had a ton of art classes, so I took about all of them, and that included a couple of computer animation classes or computer graphics classes they were. And so we were using Flash to animate when Flash still existed. And from there, that's when I really started to think seriously about making it a career. I think at the time I was thinking I would become a 2D animator and move to Japan and work in anime because that was what I was really passionate about at the time. So my parents were super supportive of me, fortunately. And so we started looking at art schools for college. And I ended up going to Savannah College of Art and Design. And I picked that one specifically because it had a ton of really interesting majors. It wasn't just an art major. There was a animation major or a visual effects major or an illustration major. And I'm really glad for that because sometimes like in-state colleges are usually a lot cheaper for those residents. That one didn't have a very robust art program. And so with SCAD, I could really focus on one particular thing. And there was a lot of them too. It wasn't like you were just going to an animation school or a game design school. It was a little bit of everything. So that was great because I went to SCAD, and my first year, they don't have you declare a major yet either. So I had time to take fundamentals and also start to understand the majors and what those classes would be like. And I really kind of realized what I was better at, what more suited for and more enjoyed was the visual effects side of things. Things where you were trying to like replicate what the real world looked like or match a look or really kind of be more of a support role than the animator is the actor of a film. And so I was glad that I was at a school that allowed me to figure that out and really find what fitted me and suited me and was my niche. And so from SCAD, I was able to kind of build a portfolio that ended up being mostly lighting. And so that's kind of my origin story of how I got from Northern Virginia to being a wannabe a lighting artist.
And if I may ask, how much of your environment would you say that you put into those personal projects that you were doing and you're creating?
Well, you know, at the time, you know, I was really into anime. So we were doing a lot of kind of leaning towards that style. But I did, one of my closest friends at the time was even was way more creative than I was. He was definitely more the animator type. And so he'd be like creating these stories with us and making these comics with the bunch of us as the main characters. And he'd be so awesome and creative at it. And I would try to do like similar type things, but I was not at the same level of 2D art as he was. And so I think that's a little bit of my environment that may have gotten into some of my artwork. But you know, it was a lot of kind of replicating the stuff that we saw and the stuff that we were watching and emulating that.
And I guess this question cannot go unasked, but top three animes, your favorite animes.
Let's see. The one that really got me into anime was Cowboy Bebop. It was definitely the gateway anime for us. At the time, it was really hard to get anime. And so there was a little bit of it on Cartoon Network, and the big one was Cowboy Bebop. And once you watch Cowboy Bebop, then you watch Rurouni Kenshin, and then you watch Inuyasha, and then you watch Fullmetal Alchemist with a big one.
Again, about your career, more of your later career, how long did it take for you to break into the industry?
I would say that I was pretty lucky, and it only took me about a year. And what had happened was one of the benefits to going to SCAD was that they had a good relationship with a lot of studios. So we frequently would have big studios come and do portfolio reviews and meet with students and do presentations. So my senior year, I had met the recruiter for DreamWorks. And at the time, DreamWorks was hiring like crazy. They were trying to get up to doing 3 movies a year. And so they needed a huge crew. And they also were looking for entry-level artists to be doing some of the, like, the, you know, the dirty work, basically, the stuff the lighters didn't want to do. So they came to SCAD to look for a bunch of those. And through that, I interviewed with DreamWorks and got rejected, actually. I didn't make it into DreamWorks that first time. And that was a crushing blow. I definitely remember feeling like somewhat the same kind of feeling like when a boyfriend breaks up with you. I was that distraught. It was horrible. But you know, we left on good terms. I asked them if they had any feedback. They told me they were looking for someone a little more technical than what I was because this position required a little bit of Python. And so I graduated without a job. But it just so happened that some of my classmates had signed a lease for an apartment in Los Angeles, but weren't going to be in that apartment for a whole month. So they said, hey, if you wanted to go out to LA, you could stay in this apartment and while we're gone and use that time to, you know, do whatever you need to do. So my mom packed up my car with all my stuff and we drove across the country to Los Angeles and we stayed in my friend's empty apartment for a month. I don't think they even had internet. So we would spend like every day going to coffee shops and applying for jobs. Basically anything that was open in LA, I was applying for. And so I got my first interview with a company that focused on renders for car manufacturers. So like, you go online and you say you want a car, you want to figure out which color you want and all the options you want. So this company did that. They had a deal with the manufacturers and had very specific software for that. So it wasn't in film or animation, but they were hiring me as a compositor. And so I was going to be using industry software. It was Nuke, and I would be working in a team. And there was a bunch of other guys there that had been in the industry at other studios, either at Sony or Disney. So I got to like learn some stuff from them. And so I worked there for about 8 months. And I was starting to think, oh, well, you know, this is okay. But, you know, I had really wanted to get into film or animation. I really wanted to work on shots or movies. And DreamWorks called me. They were still, you know, still growing, still hiring. And they said, hey, you know, we talked to you last year and we liked you, but, you know, it just didn't work out. Do you want to try again? And so I did. You know, I they told me I needed to be more technical. So before the interview, I basically crammed like all of the, like making sure I had all the last little things, any kinds of questions they might ask during the interview, because they had very lengthy interviews and some of it would be very technical questions. So I went in, did another round with interviews with them. What happened to be fortunate is that they were just adopting Nuke at the time. So they were looking for people that had Nuke experience. And here I had just spent 8 months doing Nuke compositing in another studio. And so that worked out. And so they hired me as an entry-level lighting technical assistant. And that's how I got into the industry. So it took about a year. I did a little bit of other jobs and I graduated without that first job, but I ended up making it into the industry in the end.
Would you say that a good advice to give to new grads and also people that they're just looking should not take for granted opportunities like that? Like,
yeah, I actually think that one of my, if I had a superpower, I would actually think my superpower is my ability to look at anything I'm working on and really kind of pare down like what I'm going to gain out of it. So like you say, like you look at something and it's not the ideal, because, you know, the ideal is often really hard to get, but you can look at that thing and say like, well, what am I going to get out of it? If I'm going to spend, you know, this amount of time doing something that wasn't, you know, my first choice, what am I going to take out of this so that the next time I go to a project, I've come out better for it? So I often go into basically every project doing that. What are my goals for this? What am I going to learn during this project? And I take that for basically everything in life, mentorships, mentoring, all that kind of stuff. I look at it and I say, well, how is this going to make me, you know, a more full person after this project? And so I agree. I think it's good to be able to look at opportunities that will help you propel yourself towards that goal. Or you say like, okay, you know, I was hoping for a certain thing, but I'm going to be doing something else. What can I take from this? What can I be learning in this project that I can then apply it to getting to whatever that was I was looking for?
That's such valuable insight. You ended up getting the job that you loved in the end. And how does a day-to-day look like to you?
A lighting artist, what's usually typical is you arrive in the morning and usually at like film studios, you're rendering offline. And that usually happening at night, you put it on a render farm because it's going to take a couple hours per frame. So you get to the studio in the morning and you check those renders that you were running last night and you kind of see like make any like slight last little tweaks or changes, because usually in the morning you'll have some kind of check-in with your supervisor and you'll want to show the supervisor what came from the farm last night for you. So you go to that meeting with those shots, you have your check-in, and with that, you either get some notes from them to work on for today, or you decide that some of that stuff is going to go to dailies, which is the time to present it to the creative leadership. And so you leave that check-in and you go back to your desk and you basically then spend, you know, your time either preparing for dailies, because maybe you just got a couple little tiny notes that you can fix in Nuke that are really, really quick. Or you start working on like the bigger notes. And so if you're preparing for dailies, you know, you're re-rendering real quick. Sometimes it's up to the last minute, you know, submitting your last couple of shots to your production staff. And then you go down to dailies, and dailies is usually the visual effects supervisor, the head of lighting for the show, the production designer, and the art director. And so you show your shots and it plays over and over again. You get some notes, or it gets finaled if you're lucky. And then you head back to your desk and then you spend time. Usually you have like 10 to 12 shots at a time, depends on like how complex the shots are, the sequences. And you'll kind of rotate through them. Your supervisor will often kind of give you priorities to it. Like, this is your most important one that you need to do now. These ones will kind of leave for a little bit later. And you'll work on those shots and you're kind of trying to juggle them all, you know, spending most of your time on the most important ones and a little bit of time on the other ones. And you're all preparing for the end of the day where you're about to send stuff off to the render farm. So you spend the rest of your day preparing stuff, lighting shots, checking renders, and then you queue up a long list of renders to go onto the farm for the night, and you submit it to the farm and you leave and you start over the next day.
Do you ever get like Oh no, this again.
not lighting in general. I do get something I call shot fatigue. And it's when you're working on the same shot for a couple of weeks and you've been staring at it for so long and you stop being able to, I feel like I stop being able to see it anymore. And it's that time where like you need your production designer or your visual effects supervisor to help direct it, because like you've stared at this so much, you can no longer see, you know, the forest for the trees. And you just need it to be final because you need to move on to another shot. And it's so funny. You know, I get this kind of shot fatigue over all of my stuff. And then you're finished with a movie deliver and you go to the crew screening, like 6 months later, 6 months to 8 months later, and you're like, oh my gosh, this looks a lot better than I remember it. I had gotten so tired of these shots. It looks awesome. So yeah, it can be get really challenging to work on a shot for a long time because sometimes things get noodled or you're working on little tiny little details. You'd be surprised the level that some shots like get messed with and adjusted all the way up to the very end. And you're adjusting tiny little things to make it exactly what they're looking for. But other than that, one of the things I love about the industry is that you're working on a project for, I don't know, maybe a year's tops and you go on to something totally different. And it's kind of nice. It's very refreshing. You're never like stuck doing like the same thing over and over and over again, because there'll be something else. You're going to become a professional observer of, whether it be fuzz or animals or kung fu.
Honestly, I felt that. But yeah, I had to agree. What would be some key tips, highlights that you would say fresh grads, new artists going into lighting should have on their portfolios?
For when it comes to lighting portfolios, there is still division between visual effects, live action films, and animation, and a bit of games. Games is kind of like gray area now, I think. But if you're interested in live action, you know, you want to work on like a Harry Potter or Transformers or what they're looking for is being able to integrate objects into a live plate. So if you're going to want to build a demo reel for that, and it's one of those things where you have to start thinking about making a demo reel for one or the other, a live action demo reel should have objects integrated into the plates, objects that match like other real life objects, maybe doing environments, but it's all about being photoreal. Animation is a bit different because there's a lot more character lighting happening. There's a lot more hero assets that really, instead of blending it in and making a really beautiful asset that kind of blends in with the real world, so the point that you can't tell what is real and what is fake, animation is a bit more illustrative, kind of, in which there are other principles going into composition for the shot. And so if you're interested in animation, it's a little bit about more showing that kind of by taking full CG and showing that ability to do character lighting, I think is important. And also showing composition and being able to set the focus in the frame. So if you're like, one of the things I've noticed about 2D portfolios too, and this animation lighting is the same, is like, how are you going to tell a story in your piece? You know, maybe you're, you know, not just lighting a set, but how do you light a set that kind of tells a story that draws your eyes to something? So at the end, I would say like a good animation portfolio would have maybe various times a day, so they can show some variety in lighting style. And I think it'd be good to show some kind of character lighting. And I know it's tough sometimes to get animation. So sometimes it's totally fine. I think it's totally fine to have still frames, still characters, but just still being able to light a character in an environment and do it kind of cinematically, maybe even, you know, add that into your multiple times a day kind of thing and do character in environment in multiple times a day. Just kind of showing your breadth of being able to do characters, environments, and color, I think is another good one too to have.
Actually, if I may just jump in with a question, right? Do you have any advice for those who are like fresh grads and they still haven't fully decided whether they want to focus on the CG and a very realistic lighting versus an animation lighting? What should they include in their portfolios? Should they generalize, like they should include a little bit of both, or should they specialize in one specific area?
I think it'd be good to do a little bit of both, because also too, that'll kind of tell you how you feel about both as well. Because one of the projects that I really enjoyed in college was this project where you take a photograph of an object on like a table or something, and then you would model and texture and light that object to look at like its twin. And so you put them right next to each other and you shouldn't be able to tell them apart. And it's very noodly. Like you spend a lot of time being like, wow, look, this one reflection on this top lip is just slightly different than the one on the real photo. And so by doing both, it will kind of help you, one, figure out like if you enjoy it or if you dislike it or whatever. And two, it will kind of show you what it's going to be like to do that. And sometimes, especially when you're a recent grad, it's almost good to kind of like lean into what you're better at. And so then next you switch over to doing a full CG set and you light an environment and you light a character and that just goes awesome. And that piece looks way better. And then you can kind of just start to lean into that, or you kind of go back and forth and just at some point kind of a feel that you're better at one or another. I've seen portfolios where it has both as a neat recent grad. I see that people struggle with demo reels is making them too long. I think it's less is more. And so it's a lot easier to say like, all right, I just have like three or four of one and maybe one or two of the other, and then totally splitting it up and just having like an animation reel or a VFX reel, but good to kind of try both to see how you feel about both. The other thing too is some of it is like what's going on in the industry too. Like I feel very lucky that like at the time DreamWorks was really booming and was trying to get up to three movies a year. And after they hired me, there was a shrink. And in fact, like a year later, they did a ton of layoffs. And so they weren't hiring anymore. And so a lot of the people I knew after that, who graduated after that, ended up at Sony ImageWorks. And that's like a different style. And so, you know, sometimes there's also a little bit of like, what happened for me is maybe not going to happen for you, or maybe it will. It depends on the industry. So kind of also like letting the industry tell you what is going on. So maybe too, it's like seeing who's doing a lot of hiring and be like, all right, so this studio is booming and this franchise is going crazy. It's all live action, you know, Harry Potter, or there's another Transformers coming out, or it's my crazy one is to look at Spider-Verse and say like, oh, I'm going to try to do Spider-Verse style, which is really complex. I don't want to give too much, tell people too much of what to do, because there's a little bit of like, it has to be something you enjoy, you know?
Yes, yes. It's a very good broad brushstroke over all the things that need to be touched on. Actually, I wanted to ask another question that could segue very nicely into the next section on mentorships. So what is your opinion on like fresh grads starting to like network? Like, do you have any like advice for that?
You know, I think it's really tricky, you know, when it's getting better, but like when I was graduating, it wasn't COVID times. So it was a lot easier for me to go to in-person events. I went to SIGGRAPH, which is a big event, mostly for computer graphics. Lightbox is probably the equivalent for 2D nowadays. And it's a lot easier to network in person, to like make meaningful connections. But I do feel like I have seen some recent grads do a pretty good job of networking online, either using LinkedIn or other, you know, Discord, being on forums, things like that. Kind of recommend starting to do that, starting to reach out, network online, because the more you do it, the better you get at being able to have those kinds of like icebreaker comments, being able to have a meaningful conversation. Even in person, you know, you walk up to a recruiter or an industry person, and you're like, I have no idea what to say to this person. You know, I want to make this connection, but what am I going to talk about? Like, what am I going to say? How am I going to say something that's not just like, hello, are you hiring? You know, so what's better is like you being able to make that connection so that you like show your personality and your interest and maybe a little bit of your knowledge. And that's tough to do. It's a bit of a skill. I would say start looking on LinkedIn, make meaningful connections. The tricky one for me is I will often get a lot of connections. People just add me on LinkedIn with nothing. I have no idea who this person is, no context. Sometimes I don't even have like a little thing underneath their name. It just says this person. in this place. And you're like, why did this person connect with me? Better ones are like when, you know, you make sure you put your header as like aspiring lighting artist or lighting. You just say lighting artist. You are a lighting artist. Why does having to have a job define if you are or not a lighting artist? And then also possibly, you know, if you're truly looking for something to make a connection, because just being LinkedIn connected with someone is not a network connection. You know, having, you have to have like a conversation with them. So, you know, also then reach out and be like, hello, you know, I really admire your career. I was hoping maybe you could look at my demo reel and give me some advice. And that's not you asking them for a job. That's you asking for advice that will lead you eventually to you getting yourself a job. And maybe if you're lucky, you know, this person sees your demo reel and it's amazing and they are hiring entry-level artists right now. And they say, oh, great, I'm going to put you on a list, whatever. But often it could just be like, you get a lot of great advice and you take it as that and then you let it go. Because, you know, one of the things you have to learn about network is it's not an immediate thing. You know, a connection you make with someone's not going to be a job today. It's going to be a job sometime, maybe. Or maybe just be someone that's you're going to get a lot of good advice from eventually, or someone that you share like good experiences with. But it's something, one of the things I have heard about networks recently is you kind of have to treat them like a plant, and you plant that seed and you water it every now and then. And maybe someday it will be a flower, but you can't expect it to be a flower tomorrow. But you also can't just plant the seed and then run away and not water it. You have to be able to come back and nurture that. Have a conversation, ask questions, you know, try to make it meaningful for both of you and not, you know, just what are you going to give me out of this? It's tricky. And that's why I say it's like a muscle you're going to have to grow yourself. And I feel like there's nothing wrong with starting now, trying it out, seeing what works and what doesn't work for you, and going beyond that.
Since we're talking about, making meaningful connections and actually meeting people face-to-face, online, on LinkedIn, all those social medias, what would you say are the most common trends that you see among mentees that you consider misconceptions or things that you like to debunk?
Well, I have to say one of the things I've been thinking about being a mentee, because, you know, in the last couple of years, I've done both. I've both been a mentor and I've been a mentee. Last fall, I had a chance to be a mentee in Tom Henschel's Finding Your Leadership Voice circle. And one of the things now being on both sides that I've kind of realized that you're going to get the most out of it if you as a mentee are also very active in your experience and your goals in the mentorship. And one of the things that I had found with Rise Up, because that's a little bit more like, you know, someone's portfolio and a little tiny bit about them. And then it's just like, okay, it's, you know, I get an hour with them. And one of the things that I've kind of realized with all this stuff is being a mentee and a mentor, it's hard for you to figure out how to be on the same page. So as a mentee, I think it's very important to go into every mentorship experience you have with very specific goals yourself, because the hardest thing to go into some of these mentorships as a mentor is you just getting a mentee that's just like, teach me, tell me what to do, things like that. Because I, you know, as the mentor, I may have a lot of advice and wisdom, but is that going to be what's going to be helpful for you for the next period of time, the time of the mentorship, your next couple of months as you work towards like you were looking for your first job or you're trying to finish your portfolio? So I find that, like, for me, As a mentee, in the beginning, I had a couple of mentorships in which I was just like, cool, I have a call with a mentor. We're just going to talk. And it didn't end up being very fruitful. And we would just both be kind of like, what are we going to talk about? And so as I've gotten better at being a mentee, as well as being a mentor, is that I realized that I have to go into a call as a mentee with very specific goals. I know that my mentor is good at blank. And so I want this mentor to help me with blank, blank, and blank, as something very specific so that you can help them get onto the page that you're looking for and you can lead it in the direction that it's very helpful. I think an important thing to maybe think about and look at is something called SMART goals. A SMART goal is, and it's an acronym. So S is specific. So it's like very specific to this event. M is measurable. Like how can you say from the beginning of blank period of time to blank period of time that you can measure some change into it? A is attainable. Can you accomplish this goal, especially with, you know, in this period of time of mentorship? Is it relevant? Is the goal that you're setting with this mentorship relevant to long-term goals and time-based? So, you know, if you go into like a Rise Up call where often, you know, your interaction may just be this 1 hour with this mentor, in this period of time, can they tell me what is necessary for those kinds of positions? And so if you've gone through those and you've gone through those questions of can you fill out the SMART, then you can go into that mentorship a lot more prepared, and you get a lot more out of it because you are in that mindset already for getting what the best out of it. And so as a mentor, you know, too, both with Rise Up and with WIA, I've also realized that not only am I supposed to be giving everything that I need to be giving, but I also need to be checking in with my mentees to kind of push this on to them, because like, again, I can just be talking for hours on end and I don't know if it's going to be helpful or not. And two, you know, with mentorships, one of the things I've read recently is not to think about needing to find yourself a mentor, but maybe building yourself an advisory board. So it's not just a person you look up to, but you have a collection of people that maybe you can go to, because I'm not going to be able to give even like a lighting mentee 100% of what they need. I'm going to give them a portion. I'll be able to give them something that clicks with them and me. And maybe there's going to be a different mentor or advisor that will give them a different kind of advice. And so I think it's good to kind of like spread out, you know, where you're looking for in a mentor. So instead of looking for the mentor that's going to change your life and lead you to whatever, you kind of build an advisory board so that you're, you know, constantly getting the right advice that meshes best with you, because, you know, it's like a friendship. Like some people you're going to just click with, and some people it's not going to work out. It has nothing to do with you or the mentor. It's just that relationship.
Nice, nice, nice. That actually kind of segues into the next question that I have for you. Would you recommend industry professionals, keen industry professionals, to become mentors to the next generation? And like, what do you think are like good qualities that like these mentors need to have?
I think mentoring is definitely a good thing to do, because, you know, especially if you're interested in kind of going up the career ladder, you will need to be a mentor to your junior artists. You will just have to be a mentor. And so by going out and being a mentor outside of the office is a little bit more like the challenge level of being a mentor, because when you're in office, you've got someone that's like on your team, has a very particular set of skills, has already been interviewed in. Outside of the office, you could be encountering all kinds of things that, you know, you're not prepared for. And so one of the things I think I've gained over the last couple of years as a mentor is I've become a lot more agile on my feet when it comes to like speaking with people. Also, the other awesome thing about mentoring is it forces you to like specifically put down into words advice, things. How do you make a shot look good? Like some of that stuff is instinctual now, but how can you verbalize it? And so by going out and mentoring, it allows you to better express, teach, and push, you know, people that you will have to do. And it's a very good skill to have. If you ever wanted to be a supervisor or a director or an art director, you do need to have those soft skills. And it also feels nice because sometimes, you know, you see like a whole bunch of like stuff going on out there in the world and you're like, what can I do besides donate money or time or whatnot? I think it's a good way to give too. So
I can imagine it only feels like very fulfilling, especially like the first few mentorship sessions.
Well, so it's a mixture, and it is actually also a very good lesson, because sometimes you encounter mentees that there are people that can't be mentees. for various reasons. And, you know, it's not a you thing. And it's a good thing to learn, especially for me who loves to help people, that there's just going to be times when you're not going to be able to help people. Or how to give hard feedback. You know, you encounter a mentee that they're like, I don't understand why I'm not getting a job right now. And you can look at their portfolio and see why they're not getting a job right now. How do you tell them that? And that's a very hard thing to do. And it's something that I think I've been very bad at. I'm trying to get better at being able to do that. How do you give them what they need to hear without being mean or heartbreaking? Or how do you give criticism without crushing someone, you know? Mm. And so that's a really hard thing to do, but I feel like it's a very good learning experience, because I hope that someday I will be able to give the feedback that somebody needs to hear, and it helps them and it gets them to that next level.
When you were talking about that, for some reason, this quote kind of went through my head. Like, there's a difference between being direct and being rude. And I think like that kind of like sums up like this quite nicely, because it's such a steep learning curve to find a balance, or like to find the soft spot for that.
Yeah. And the one too, I'll sometimes see people on Discord saying like, I wish that I didn't get a mentor that just was too soft and didn't tell me what I needed to know. And I was like, oh, I was probably that mentor sometimes, where I wouldn't say it because I didn't want to be... I didn't know how to say it. And so what I'm trying to figure out to learn is like how to properly ask, what kind of feedback do they want, and mm-hmm. and how do they want it? The feedback giver and the feedback receiver have to be on the same plane.
Definitely, definitely. So we've been talking offline a little bit about like some growth and development books you've been reading recently. So do you have any like main takeaways that you'd like to share with the audience?
Beginning of the year, I think a recruiter shared a whole bunch of links to a bunch of books to read. And I had also, my mentor had given me one. And so I read Thanks for the Feedback by Douglas Stone, Atomic Habits by James Clear, Recalculating by Lindsay Pollack, and Mindset by Kara Dweck. Carol Dweck, it's D-W-E-C-K. So these are a bunch of books that like talk about like kind of a lot about goal setting and growth. You know, when it comes to that kind of feedback of, you know, your portfolio is at this state and we need to get it to this state, you know, you have a longer way to go than maybe you initially thought. There's two kinds of mindsets. There's the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. And so if you're in a fixed mindset where you look at that portfolio and you say, this is me. And you're telling me that this is not ready for a job. You're telling me that I'm not ready for a job and I will never be ready for a job because that is me. It's fixed. But if you have a growth mindset and you understand that you will constantly be growing and constantly have the ability to get better with time, with effort, with experience, then you hear that, you hear, this is not ready for a job. It needs to grow into here. Then you are better able to take that because you know that is not you and that is not permanent and fixed, that you will be able to grow into that job. And I've definitely remembered times when I've been in that fixed mindset and it's been hard to look at, you know, a goal or a future or something, because I don't believe that I will be able to get there. I don't believe I'll ever be able to be as artistic. I don't believe I'll be smart enough. And it's not true. We all have the ability to grow. And to let that fixed mindset kind of strangle you, because often if you do that, if you're in a fixed mindset and someone says, this is not good enough for a job, you say, well, then I'm just going to stop trying. Whereas like, if you think of yourself in a growth mindset, you're like, okay, I will keep working at it. I'll keep growing. And that's one of the things I think I've seen a little bit of, like either in myself or sometimes in some of the mentees that I've encountered. You think that you are trapped and will never be able to get to that point, instead of being okay with the fact that you're not good at something right now and that you will get better at it with time and you will get there eventually, that you're not going to be stuck So I think that was a really amazing book to read and kind of think about. And that was also what the Thanks for the Feedback book was about too, was about, you know, sometimes you have to be in a particular mindset for being able to receive feedback. And it's about, like, you know, not making it personal, being excited to be told what you can do to being able to get better. You know, don't be afraid of feedback, because instead of allowing this blind spot of something, someone is going to precisely tell you what that you need to do next to get to your next spot. And so that's why, you know, it's a little bit about mindset and being able to grow.
It's a very, very interesting point. Maybe I'll check out that book after this recording. So now we're going to move on to, like, our celebrate part. So it's going to be a bit more fun. Now it's going to be a bit of a lightning round for you. So who is your favorite fictional character and why?
Okay. I have to say, of all the questions you pre-sent me, these were the scariest ones, because I'm not a favorites kind of person. I don't have favorites. I love lots of things. So I've been thinking about this all day. What is my favorite fictional character? Because a lot of it, this is why I don't have any tattoos, because there's nothing that I love for anything longer than like a week. I think, you know, one of the characters recently that I've enjoyed a lot is Scarlet Witch. That's one of the few characters where I've ever been like, oh yeah, I would definitely get Scarlet Witch merchandise. She's cool looking. She has awesome powers. She's an interesting character. She's super strong. I think that's what that's a lot of the female characters I've liked recently are like Ahsoka, Tano, Miss Marvel was pretty cool. Any kind of superhero character where it's like female character can kick anyone's butt. She don't need anyone to help her anymore.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So now we're going to move on to the next one, which is, who is your favorite creator / artist, writer, etc., and why?
Same thing. I don't have favorites. Okay. But so the recently, one of the few creators, artists that I've been following a lot has been Roger Deakins. He's a cinematographer. He recently released a book of photography. It was super cool. There were several times where like he was going on tour for the photography and I almost went down to like get an autograph. But I didn't.
Oh, you should have.
Well, it's one of the things. What are you gonna say to someone like that? And who else? I watched Bee and Puppy Cat, which was amazing on Instagram. I follow Angela Sung and all of her work is beautiful. I have a original of hers, which I cherish. It's very small, but like usually like if you go to, there's a gallery here in LA that sells original work of like visual development artists. Definitely a goal of mine someday to be able to afford to buy a bunch of those. And usually it's like a couple $100 for like a small original of hers. And at DreamWorks once she was selling like some of her little postcard size ones. And I got it for like $75. And I was so like, oh my gosh, I have an original.
Oh my gosh.
It's silly because the prints are just as nice, but.
Yeah, her classes are really nice. I love her.
So that actually segues really nicely to our last question, which is like, who are you like digging right now that we should check out?
I also really respect Carla Ortiz for all she's been doing lately. Iris Muddy, I see a lot of her work lately. If we want to talk film, there's a new Wes Anderson I'm really looking forward to. I really dig his style in a very different way. It's so interesting because like usually like what we're working on, or at least in it, you know, DreamWorks or even at ILM is very like deep and rich. And it's about like showing three-dimensionality. Wes Anderson has such different, interesting compositions, and it's all about being really flat. And it's almost like hard to like talk through the composition of a Wes Anderson than it is to talk through the composition of like a normal like Pixar or DreamWorks film, because he does something so different. And so I'm like, let's not talk about Wes Anderson and mentorships, because he's just breaking all the rules and doing all kinds of weird stuff. And it looks amazing. Every frame is truly a painting of his. So definitely looking forward to his next movie coming out.
It's exciting. Okay, last one. This is our final question for you. And it's going to be our wrap-up question. So what is something you know that you wish you knew sooner?
I definitely wish that... I definitely wish that I knew to advocate for myself sooner. There were a lot of times where I assumed that someone would just see my work and know that I'm ready for the next level, or know I'm ready for the next step. For many various reasons, either they're busy or they don't know that you're ready for it. You haven't expressed it. They don't know that you're ready for the next, for that promotion or the next piece or a more complicated thing. And I've really kind of realized that you are your best advocate. And it's very important for you to, you know, make those connections with the people that are going to give you those things and express to them that my goal is this. I want to get there. So please keep me in mind for promotion, more complicated shots, a different type of shots, this particular kind of movie, stuff like that. So there were many times where I hadn't expressed that I was interested in that. And now, especially as I get more and more senior, I've had a couple of either mentors, talent managers, stuff like that, tell me that, like, well, if only I'd known this, you know? And so I've been a lot more clear, like, truly my goal in the next year is to get blank. You have to clearly say that. You have to express that and advocate for yourself. That's truly going to be the fastest way to get things. And trust that if they don't think you're ready for it, they will tell you what you need to do to get to be there. Because I think that was some of my worries and what had held me back sometimes. I was like, well, I'd really like to be a lead, but maybe I'm not ready for it. And after advocating for it or talking through it and really expressing that I'm interested in these types of things, people will give you the advice or help you figure out that roadmap for getting to those goals. Advocate for yourself, speak up for yourself, make those connections and declare your goals so that the people around you will help you get there.
Nice. That's a very solid ending. Thank you so much, Christy, for your time. And it's been such a pleasure having you with us today. Why don't you share your social media or website or where people can check out your work, where people can connect with you meaningfully?
I think best way is to find me on LinkedIn. It's pretty easy to find, to look me up. I have an Instagram account, but I don't particularly use it. LinkedIn is the best to find if you want to see my latest demo reel, which I believe is being hosted on ArtStation. As like a senior artist in film, I don't particularly have a very active portfolio anymore because I just kind of stay at the same place for a long time. I don't need websites or Instagram anymore. And so it just becomes I'm one of those horrible people that have no social media presence very much at all. So find me on LinkedIn.
Okay. And with that, thank you so much, Christy. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Ink and Paint Folk is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. This episode was produced by me, Cassie Soliday,
Yira Rodriguez,
and Nate Carvalho. Music by Dominique Parker. Edited by Daniel Rotorik. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.